You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
You're listening to NPR News. I'm Angela Davis. Good morning. This month, the Minnesota Department of Health announced some big changes are coming to the state's medical marijuana program. There are new conditions for which it can be prescribed, more locations where registered patients can buy it, and more forms that they can buy it in. Health department leaders approved cannabis as a treatment for chronic pain and the eye condition macular degeneration beginning next August. They announced eight more centers where the drug can be purchased, that those will be opening, and two new delivery methods that will be available, meaning ways that you can ingest medical cannabis. Now, when Governor Mark Dayton signed the Medical Cannabis Therapeutic Use Act into law back in May of 2014, Minnesota became the 23rd state to legalize the drug as a medicine. Now, about 18,000 patients are enrolled in the state's program, getting treatment for a wide range of conditions, including cancer, glaucoma, Crohn's disease, autism, and Alzheimer's disease. This hour, we're getting an update on how Minnesota's medical cannabis program is doing and how it is changing. Let me introduce my guests here in the studio. We have Chris Focus here, the acting director of the Office of Medical Cannabis at the Minnesota Department of Health. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And we also have Dr. Kyle Kingsley. He is the founder and CEO of Vireo Health and Minnesota Medical Solutions, which produces cannabis medications. Hi, Dr. Kingsley.
Good morning.
Hi, good to see you. Also in studio, we have Jessica Hauser. She is the mother of a medical cannabis patient, 7-year-old Wyatt Hauser, and she's also vice chair of Sensible Change Minnesota. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Angela. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate all of you coming in so we could talk about this. And Chris, I want to start with you by talking about the changes that were just announced earlier this month by the health department. And I mentioned those two new conditions have been added for those who qualify for medical marijuana. So beginning of July of 2020, that's when those people will be able to sign up.
That's right.
And they'll be able to purchase it in August. So chronic pain and macular degeneration, why were those two conditions chosen to be included?
Sure. So the state has a petition process. So it's an annual petition process, and we open up the process in July of every year, and anyone can request that we consider adding another condition or another delivery method to the program. Mm-hmm. We ask that they fill out the form, so they need to tell us sort of why do you want to add this condition, what evidence is there that the that medical cannabis is effective for the condition, and any other sorts of information that they have available. And then we have a petition panel that reviews those petitions as well. We also have a research staff in-house at the Office of Medical Cannabis at the Minnesota Department of Health, and we do a literature review. And so we really thoroughly vet these conditions, see what information, what science is there, if there is science, what patient experience is there to consider. And then we turn it over to the commissioner, and the commissioner makes a decision each year.
So you're listening and looking to see what could be, you know, warranted.
That's right.
So I know that intractable pain was already on the list. How is that different from chronic pain?
Sure. So intractable pain, as we define it, is pain for which the source cannot be removed. It also requires that the patient has tried a variety of other pain relief methods prior to trying medical cannabis. For chronic pain, there's not a single clear definition of chronic pain, but usually it's pain that's lasted for around 6 months. There's not a requirement that patients have tried a host of other pain relief methods before trying cannabis.
And then the eye condition, that's age-related, right? Macular degeneration.
Right.
What is that, and what are the symptoms of that?
Right.
It sounds terrible.
Well, so it's really just a kind of age-related degeneration affecting the retina. Mm-hmm. You know, there are limited treatments available right now. One is there's a wet and dry form of this condition. One is like a vitamin regimen, and the other treatment is injections in the eye. It was someone who has this condition that petitioned us for consideration, and it was really sort of considering whether there could be benefits and weighing that against potential harms.
And so I also mentioned that there are two new ways that patients will be able to ingest medical marijuana. And I know currently it's only available in pill, vapor, oil, topical liquid forms. So what are the new methods?
Sure. So the new methods are water-soluble cannabinoid particulates. So what that means is it's like granules or powders or sprinkles, I guess, something that you can stir into a liquid, or, you know, it's common to take other medications and like stir it into your applesauce or something like that.
Okay. And then the second one, orally dissolvable products?
That's right. So like a lozenge.
Okay. Or a gum.
Yeah.
Or a tablet like that. Yeah. And so what does that do, creating different delivery methods?
Yeah. So, you know, there's different time. So people, what people like about the products are, you know, it's pretty common for folks to use a couple different methods. So if you're taking a capsule, that would be more of like a time release situation. So it will help you over the course of the day or over a course of a number of hours versus a vape that is pretty immediate effect on your symptoms. And with a vape, you can sort of titrate a little bit better. So if you need just a little bit more relief, you can take just a little bit more, which you can't do with a capsule. So the water-soluble particulates, that granule or powder, will have a similar effect or ability for the patient like a vape. So you'd be able to titrate that a little bit more. You could use a little bit more of the granules if you need a little bit more help with your symptoms, that sort of thing.
And the last thing that's new, eight new locations where registered patients can fill their prescriptions. So that basically doubles the number of locations.
That's right.
Where are they, or where will they be? They're all throughout the state.
Right. So really what we did was when we first opened the Office of Medical Cannabis, there were going to be eight centers, and we have eight congressional districts. So we wanted to have geographic distribution. So we assigned the odd number districts to one manufacturer and the even number districts to the other. And this time around, we flipped that. So that our intent is that there will be each manufacturer will be have one center in each congressional district, and that will provide patients consumer choice. So each manufacturer has a different product line, different customer service model, and people can find what works for them.
All right. I do have the list. Leafline Labs has proposed centers in Willmar, Mankato, Golden Valley, and Rogers, while Minnesota Medical Solutions has proposed centers in Woodbury, Blaine, Duluth, I'm Burnsville.
Thank you.
So, okay. Dr. Kingsley, now that chronic pain is a qualifying condition, you're, you know, the CEO of one of the manufacturing companies. What do you see happening because of this broad list of approved conditions?
Yeah, the big question there is, you know, chronic pain, how many patients is that going to add versus the intractable pain that already qualifies? And what I encourage listeners is if you have pain more days than not, you may be technically a chronic pain patient, and you should talk to your physician to see if this may work for you. Very excited about the addition of chronic pain because I think it's going to increase awareness. And one of my passions in this kind of endeavor is to replace opioids with cannabis alternatives. I think that's a great thing for society and for our patients. So I'm excited. I don't know the magnitude of the change that we're looking at, how many more patients are going to be added, but I hope it does increase awareness for folks.
Well, you do know the top conditions that you're already seeing in the last 5 years since Minnesota Medical Solutions has been processing and selling these medical cannabis products. So what are some of the top conditions that you see your patients or your customers come in and that they're getting?
Yeah, the majority of our patients are intractable pain patient, muscle spasm patients. That is the majority of patients right now. Chris may be able to run down the list a little bit better.
Yeah, top conditions. 64% of our patients are certified for intractable pain right now. So by far, that's the top.
And again, that means we've tried other things and it didn't work.
That's right.
Intractable pain. And again, to remind people to take a step back, this is not like going to Walgreens and getting a medication. The process of becoming a certified patient, you have to get a doctor.
That's right.
A doctor who can give you the diagnosis, and then that condition has to be on the list.
Right? That's right. So a healthcare practitioner registers with our program as a certifier. And what that physician is doing is simply certifying that you do indeed have one of the conditions that are on our list of qualifying conditions. Once you are certified to have that condition, you can be registered in the program. There is an annual fee that patients pay. And then
and that's what, $200?
$200. Or if they have medical assistance or other a couple other things, they can pay a reduced fee of $50.
And what's the point of all these steps?
Well, this is truly a medical model. So we want to make sure that we are abiding by our list of qualified conditions, that you are working with a physician that you have an ongoing relationship with. Once people get to the, we call them cannabis patient centers, not dispensaries. But once you get there to get your medication, you're meeting with a pharmacist. And so you're having a consultation about what is your condition, what are your particular symptoms, and then what does the pharmacist recommend for products for you.
And insurance in general doesn't cover medical cannabis.
That's right. It is cost is out of pocket for patients.
And so, Dr. Kingsley, one of the big the feedback that I've seen most commonly, and I think surveys from the health department have shown this, is the expense has been a real problem for most people who want to try this. So why is it so expensive?
Yeah, there's quite a few reasons for that, actually. And some of them are inevitable and something that I really support. And so anything that's kind of safety focused, third-party testing of all of our products, that's really critical. That does drive up the expense to some extent. The other big differentiator between Minnesota and pretty much every other THC medical cannabis state is that we don't allow flower. And
flower,
yeah, the bud of the plant, yeah, the cannabis flower itself. Using that would dramatically decrease the cost for many patients to the point of maybe even 60 or 70% reduction in the cost. You can still require some pretty substantial safety steps, microbiological safety testing, that kind of stuff. But it's just a much more affordable product than the highly processed products that we offer right now.
And so, what can you tell me about the expense of this? I know some reporting by the Pioneer Press earlier this year found that patients talked about paying between $200 and $700 a month on medical cannabis medications.
Yeah, our average patient spends about $180 a month, and there is a huge range from $50 a month to thousands of dollars a month. Actually, I would anticipate, like I said, that cutting in half with the addition of flower for many patients that can use flower in lieu of oils for their medication.
And so, do you see the cost going down? What would bring the cost down?
Yeah, so we've actually, thanks to the efforts of Chris and the program, we've seen economies of scale sort of kick in. So we actually did a 30% price reduction across the board here recently, and that's just due to economies of scale. And so the more demand we have, the more patients that we have coming to the program, we'll see continuing decreases in pricing, I anticipate.
I think the big question most people have is it working? Are these patients seeing results? And so, Jessica, I want to turn to you. Your son, Wyatt, he was 7 years old now. He has epilepsy. And your family was one of the first, if not the first, to register for medical cannabis 5 years ago to help him with his symptoms. He was a toddler at the time. Has the medical marijuana made a difference now?
100%. Wyatt has been participating in the program and using a CBD and THC-based product. So he takes that orally in a liquid form, and he takes it 3 times a day. And what it does is it helps reduce the number of seizures that he has every day. He has a chronic epilepsy called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, which unfortunately his seizures are intractable, going back to that word, that they're difficult to control. However, the medical cannabis helps reduce the number of seizures he has every day, the intensity, and then overall just provides him with a better quality of life. It improves his sleep, his appetite, and helps manage some of the symptoms that he has from his other pharmaceutical medications.
And so he's in the second grade, is that correct?
He's in the second grade, yep.
So what happens during the school day? How is it administered to him?
It cannot be administered during the school day. So that's something that we do have to manage through his medication administration. So we administer his medical cannabis at home, and we've just had to adjust his medical medicine administration to address that.
So he was two when you first started. So what was it like when he was two trying to get him to take it, and how long did it take for you to notice a difference?
You know, it's almost immediate. in seeing his symptoms improve with taking the medical cannabis. And if he misses a dose or if we can't take it because of wherever he's located that won't allow for that administration, you can tell that he is not sort of his quote-unquote normal self.
So he, obviously, as a seven-year-old, he's much bigger now than when he was two. So how has that impacted his dosage and just, you know, what you're seeing as he is getting bigger and older?
That is a great question. He, we have not been able to readily increase his dose. So he is a lot bigger than he was when he started. But since we've been participating in this program for almost 5 years, we've spent nearly $10,000 out of pocket to treat his epilepsy with medical cannabis. And fortunately, we're able to afford that. If we have to increase his dose substantially, that'll be a much more difficult conversation to have as far as how we pay for that. However, there are so many patients in Minnesota that have cost as a barrier to them being able to access truly beneficial medication.
So what is it on a monthly basis?
On a monthly basis, we spend about $200.
And so as he gets older, you can see that expense going up.
100%. He's 50 pounds right now, and dosing, just like any other medication, it increases as you grow.
And so what have you learned over the last 5 years as this process has changed and the list has broadened? What have you seen over the last 5 years that you want people to know?
I would love, I support what Kyle said in expanding the types of cannabis that can be available to patients, right? We have a very restrictive program here with a limited amount of competition and opportunities for people to select different types of cannabis for the patient that, or for their symptoms and the illnesses that they need to address. So I'd say broadening the market, improving patient access and affordability is a top priority. Enhancing patient protections, making sure that patients can access their medications wherever they are, whether they're at school, whether they're in their workplace, making sure that we're addressing administrative and regulatory issues. You know, we want high quality medical cannabis to be available to patients. A lot of patients who can't afford this program right now are turning to the black market. They're ordering things online that are of dubious quality, and they could be doing real harm to themselves, both from a health perspective and, you know, just from a criminality perspective. Like, patients should not have to become criminals to treat their medical issues. And then the other thing that I'd love to see after being part of this program for 5 years is just a bigger, more open market for medical cannabis, you know, like address some of the regulatory issues, make sure that we're opening the door to other businesses and organizations to be able to participate in the medical cannabis program here in the state. The more opportunity there is for different vendors, different suppliers, the better the marketplace will be here in offering good medications to patients who need that help.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Minnesota's medical cannabis program. 5 years now. What have we learned in 5 years about the use and the sale of medical cannabis in Minnesota? I would love to hear from you. Give us a call at 651-227-6000, or you can leave me a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, MPR. You can ask a question, or if you have a story, if you've tried medical cannabis, I want to hear from you. Did it work? Did it not work? If you want to try, what's holding you back? Chris, I turn to you. You're with the health department. What have we learned in 5 years?
Sure. So one thing that I'm really proud of about our program that I think is unique across the U.S. is that we are really committed to learning from patient experience. So we have a research department. We have three staff in that research department, and we have a patient experience survey that patients complete every time they visit the dispensary. So we are learning what condition someone has, what they're taking for that condition, and what their benefits and symptoms are related to that medication. So we have taken that information in aggregate and created this annual cohort report. So we're able to speak to the benefits and side effects of the program, looking at kind of each year on a rolling basis. We also look at specific conditions as they're added to our program. So we have two condition-specific reports that we have issued, one on intractable pain and one on PTSD. And we have learned a ton about the benefits and side effects that folks are experiencing.
So tell me, what are people saying about relief from pain that they haven't been able to get relief from in any other way?
The vast majority of folks are saying that they are having relief of symptoms. We do provide an opportunity for folks to leave comments in these surveys, and we include the comments verbatim because they're so powerful.
And the severity of the pain or the frequency of the pain? What can you tell us?
So the severity of the pain generally, but people are also, like in the case of PTSD, some of the comments that we received from people are they've been able to sleep through the night for the first time in 10 years. They have been able to sort of self-regulate enough that they can get back into therapy and get what they need for their PTSD, and they hadn't been able to do that in the past. Mm-hmm. So really powerful comments.
And I want to add a message here on Twitter. On Twitter, Heavy Hands writes this, Angela, I notice obstructive sleep apnea is on the list of qualifying conditions, and I'm wondering if your guests can speak to how medical cannabis may help OSA. I've always been told marijuana can disrupt sleep cycles and worsen some issues related to collapsing of airways. So sleep apnea is on the list. Dr. Kingsley or Chris, what can you tell us about patients who are using medical cannabis for that?
Yeah, I don't have a ton of familiarity with the evidence for obstructive sleep apnea. Chris may have more. So, you know, I guess like many things, there's little downside in trying to see if it works for you. It does not work for everybody. And this applies to things like obstructive sleep apnea, you know, chronic pain. I'd encourage folks to talk to your doctor if you want to try this as an alternative and see if it works for you.
So have people come to you and said, like, I tried this for a month, 6 months, it's not working. So is that true? I mean, for some people, they see huge results and others don't.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. You know, the difference between cannabis as medicine and something like aspirin is that it's not binary. It's not like, you know, you try this one medicine and it works or it doesn't. There are literally thousands of medicines that can be made from cannabis. We have, I think, about 60 different products available. They can be very different. Some of them can be mood altering. The majority of them are not. And it's an iterative process with patients. And so just because the first formulation doesn't work for you, we can try again and again and try to get the right solution for you.
And so of the conditions that your patients and customers are coming to purchase from you, which ones seem to be having the most relief?
You know, speaking as a physician, I'm most comfortable with the kind of chronic pain diagnosis, especially those folks that are on a huge dose of opioids. We lose more than 20,000 people per year from prescription opioid overdoses. It truly is a public health crisis. And I have some remarkable, you know, stories just kind of at the top of my head where people have been using hundreds of milligrams of morphine on a daily basis. And within weeks or months, they're able to substantially reduce or discontinue their opioid use.
Now, I remember when medical cannabis first became legal, there were many doctors who did not want to be a part of it, who did not want to certify his patients. Has that gotten better?
I believe we're at 1,600.
Yeah,
plus,
we're at 1,600. I will say with both patients and healthcare providers, we have just seen a steady climb in increasing numbers in both categories.
And why do you think that is?
I think people are, you know, it's becoming destigmatized, and I think people are becoming more comfortable with cannabis as a medication. I would like to think that some of the research that we're sharing is helping people as well to understand how it's beneficial for particular conditions. And I think that's helping people both on the patient side and on the healthcare provider side.
Right now, we're talking about medical marijuana, medical cannabis. It's been 5 years since it became legal here in Minnesota. So this hour, we're examining how the program is going, who is using it and for what, and is it helping? I'm talking with a leader from the State Health Department, one of the manufacturers of the drugs, and the mother of a young patient who has epilepsy. And I want to hear from you, too. Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or tweet me at Angela Davis, MPR. Let me remind you who's here in the studio with me. We've got Chris Focus here, the acting director from the Office of Medical Cannabis at the Minnesota Department of Health, as well as Dr. Kyle Kingsley, the founder and CEO of Vireo Health and Minnesota Medical Solutions, which produces cannabis. cannabis medications. And Jessica Hauser is here with me. She's the mother of a young medical cannabis patient, 7-year-old Wyatt Hauser, and she's also the vice chair of Sensible Change Minnesota. And I want to go to the phone lines. Let's grab a call from a listener in St. Louis Park this morning. We have Jacob on the phone, Dr. Jacob Meerman. Good morning.
Hello. Jacob Meerman. Yeah, I'm with Life Medical. We are a primary care clinic, and we do certify people for medical cannabis.
Okay.
Now, just for perspective, we started doing it in 2015, and the clinic has so far certified just under 3,000 people. We are seeing all these people in follow-up, so we're getting pretty clear picture of what cannabis can do in patients.
So are your patients reporting that they're getting some relief or not?
Absolutely. You know, I didn't expect it. I agreed to do it because I thought it's reasonable. Is cannabis seems safe? So I started certifying, and then once we started seeing the follow-up, this is nothing short of amazing. I've never seen a single drug do this much good with so little side effects.
And so, Dr. Meerman, is it mostly people who have chronic pain or intractable pain, or what types of conditions are they treating it?
Common patients that we're getting are with pain. You can call it intractable or chronic. It's really not a big difference, in my opinion. Mm. Then PTSD has been very, very high in the last couple of years since it became available, a qualifying condition. We're seeing quite a few sleep apnea cases lately. Mm. We've seen a few autistic kids, seizures, and a few other things. Inflammatory bowel disease responds quite well in most cases. Like one case comes to mind, patient has Crohn's. He has diarrhea 16 times a day. He starts on cannabis. In follow-up a couple of months later, there's no more diarrhea. He has normal form stool for like once or twice a day, and that's it, and no pain. So amazing.
Wow.
So this doesn't happen to everybody, but this kind of reports are very, very common.
And Dr. Meerman, one question too. Do your patients talk about the expense? Are people struggling to pay for the medical cannabis?
That's the main problem. In my experience, they spend anywhere between $100 and $1,000 a month. Probably $200 to $400 is the common range. The pain seems to take more. Other conditions may be less. People, basically what they do is they medicate as needed, when they can afford it. When they're on medication, they feel way better. And without, narcotics, opioids, people with pain get off of the opioids. This is happening all the time. We've even taken people off of fentanyl, which is the highest intensity opioid.
Wow.
So very, very powerful in pain. Most people, like the first thing you see in people when they come in for follow-up is they say they sleep better and their anxiety is way down. And these are not qualifying conditions, but that's kind of like the icing on the cake. You know, it's a beneficial side effect.
Absolutely. Well, that is Dr. Jacob Meerman calling in from St. Louis Park this morning. Thank you, Doctor. I appreciate hearing your insight. Someone who is certifying patients so that they can get a prescription for medical cannabis. And Dr. Kingsley, Chris, Jessica, what do you think? I mean, he covered a lot of ground there.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about some of his comments there?
Yeah, he brought up anxiety and sleep, which are not currently qualifying conditions. But I am very interested in sort of those two qualifying conditions. I think it's likely that cannabis in some formulations is going to be meaningful in with those two problems.
Mm-hmm. I would say from a parent perspective, sleep has absolutely improved for Wyatt since beginning to use medical cannabis. And
then
I
getting more
that.
Sleep, we know that helps with everything, with mood and behavior.
Sleep is necessary for the brain to recover. So when you have epilepsy, when you have some sort of disorder neurologically, sleep is incredibly important. So,
mm-hmm. And Chris, there at the health department, what do you make of that doctor's observations of the patients that he is treating?
I think it's right on with what we're hearing from our patients and from other healthcare practitioners. He's right. It doesn't work for everyone, but the vast majority of folks are reporting similar experience.
Mm-hmm. I want to grab another phone call in Maple Grove. Greg is listening this morning. Hi, Greg.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead with your question.
Well, one of the guests mentioned that medical marijuana can reduce or eliminate the need for opioids. And that's true. However, finally, the chronic nerve pain I have is deemed that I can get medical marijuana. If I find a doctor, then I pay $200 a year and then hundreds of dollars a month for the medical marijuana. Or my doctor prescribes me an opioid prescription that I get for a $4 copay.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't, what's being said and what actually is the case are not the same thing.
That's Greg there in Maple Grove. Dr. Kingsley?
Yeah, Greg, definitely feel you, and I'm sorry that that you're dealing with this. But you know, you really hit it on the head. The fact that somebody for a $4 or $6 copay can buy a lethal dose of OxyContin, but has to spend $200 on a very safe alternative in the form of medical cannabis, kind of just demonstrates the dysfunction of where we are. And you know, there's a 100-year history to why this is the way it is. But we're 100% with you, and I look forward to the day when you can get a cannabis-based alternative to opioids for a $4 copay. You know, we're a ways away from that. It'll take federal change before a lot of the insurers can do this, but it will happen. So I know that doesn't help you today. But
this is Jessica. One thing that I have found to be very helpful is continuing to advocate for changes here. Lawmakers, where some of these challenges are hung up there, really need to hear from patients directly. They need your emails. They need your meetings. And I would encourage anybody who's experiencing barriers to access because of cost to reach out to lawmakers, both at the state and federal level, to encourage change.
All right. I want to talk to another one of our listeners. And we're talking about medical marijuana here in Minnesota. It's for 5 years now. It's been legal. And we're starting to hear now results that people are experiencing and all the different conditions as that list has grown longer. In Chisholm this morning, Clayton is calling in. Clayton, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Go ahead with your comment or your question.
Well, I just bought some organic hemp seed oil. It says 100% cold pressed cannabis, sativa oil, THC-free, THC-free, 100% tested, and I don't know, am I just wasting my money? I bought it at Walmart for $15.
That sounds good. So Clayton from Chisholm brings up a great point. A lot of products now you can buy, which, you know, state that it contains CBD oil. You don't need a prescription. It's cheap, as he says. How is that different from the products that you all are overseeing, the medical cannabis that you need a prescription for?
This is a really great question. The CBD oil, hemp flowers being sold, it's really everywhere. It's at Walmart. It's at your gas station. It's at your spa. They're selling it for your pets. It's everywhere. And it's not a regulated industry right now, the over-the-counter products. Last legislative session, there was a bill that was passed that will require in Minnesota, effective January 1st in 2020, for these products to be tested and labeled, which I think will help consumers a great deal. Because right now, there have been instances where folks have gone and gathered up a variety of products and tested them off the shelf, and some of the products don't contain what their label says they contain.
So the risk is because they're not regulated. You can't be certain of what you're getting.
That's right.
Right. Well, and as a consumer, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. It's just sort of the old axiom I go by. If you're purchasing it from a gas station or from a major retailer, it's probably not medical grade. So the benefit, you may receive benefits, you may not, but it might not even be a consistent experience when you buy that product again because it isn't regulated.
We did grab a few years ago, about 14 different products just sort of off the shelves, and about a third of them didn't actually contain CBD, mm-hmm. which was pretty remarkable. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what do you all think about the possibility that the that recreational marijuana could be legalized in Minnesota? I mean, across the country, more and more states are legalizing mm-hmm. marijuana. What will that do to this industry of medical cannabis?
Well, we know from other state experiences that they have seen a reduction in the medical patients, anywhere between 15% and 40% reduction in patients, with the exception of Massachusetts, which interestingly saw an increase in patients. And it might have had to do with taxing. Like sometimes states will tax the recreational or adult use side of products and not tax the medical products, that sort of thing. But, you know, generally there will be some folks that will move over to the adult use side. But there is, I think, a real market for this medical model, the consultation with a pharmacist, the need for patients like Wyatt who are not old enough to obtain products on the adult side. So I think there still will be a market for medical cannabis.
Dr. Kingsley? Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, as a patient, as a parent of a patient, full legalization does little to no good for pediatric patients because they really need to consume medical cannabis, medical grade cannabis in a very different way. They need those liquid products. They need those.
The form.
The different form.
And Dr. Kingsley, you can help explain, sort of like take us back a little bit medically, that the medical cannabis, it doesn't contain the ingredient that would make you feel high.
Not necessarily the case. So some of our formulations don't have THC, which is the active ingredient that causes people to be quote unquote high. Interestingly, THC is one of the best pain medications in the plant. And, if you compare its side effect profile, which, one of my colleagues says, side effects may include happiness and hunger. That's a lot different than what we see with opioids, which, they upton you, they constipate you, they make you miserable. I tell people the story of, look, right now, before we had medical cannabis, somebody dying of pancreatic cancer got to choose between bone-crushing pain or obtunding doses of opioids where they're basically absent from life but out of pain. The alternative now with cannabis is, they'll be a little bit high. They might be a little bit giggly, but they'll be hungry. They'll be able to engage with their family for the last weeks of their lives. What is that worth? So I'm not afraid of THC. I've definitely changed my tune on adult use. I see that as sort of the ultimate access for people. What I can say is whether you're using it for pure adult use or medical, I think that everybody wants safety. They want precision. They want quality. And to Jessica's point, you can never let kind of the safety testing go. And, the pediatric epilepsy patients, the true medical patients can't be forgotten in any system.
I also, as we were just talking about recreational marijuana, I want to talk about another thing that's been in the news a lot, vaping and vape pens, manufactured cannabis products like vaping pens. Do you think there'll be some increased pressure to make the plant form available because of what we're seeing with some of the vaping problems?
Sure. So I think that we do anticipate some pressure there. There have not been any instances found in Minnesota where people using exclusively medical cannabis products from our two manufacturers have had lung injury reported. So we can say that. That said, vaping is a relatively new technology, and I don't think that we know everything, so we can't 100% say that they're safe.
But the health department is also overseeing or keeps an eye on what's happening with vaping.
Absolutely.
The same department.
Yes, we are investigating those cases.
I want to grab another phone call. In Rochester, Gigi is listening this morning. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Go ahead, Gigi.
Hi there. Good morning.
Yes, what's your question?
I just wanted to call up and talk about my experience. I moved here from Arizona, and my doctors in Arizona recommended that I get a medical card, which I did, and I was able to get my medicine in Arizona. And when I moved to Minnesota, the conditions here, they're not covered, so I haven't been able to get a card here. And
Gigi, what is your condition that you're seeking treatment for?
Well, I take a medicine that gives me really bad nausea, and Arizona includes that you can have treatment for symptoms that come from treatment of another condition. So that's what I, and I also have, I also have a condition that used for pain as well, but the nausea from medicine is the number one. And I mean, I live in the Med City, and in the over 1,000 years it's been available to people, it hasn't caused one death, which I think is really impressive, but it's still not available to me. And I just feel like I get really angry when I hear about the medical cannabis program because mm-hmm. it's not for everybody. Like, it's only for a few people, even though, I mean, it's shown to be very beneficial. And I just get a little bit upset with that because my quality of life could be much, much better.
That's Gigi from Rochester. So I'll send this to you, Chris, with the health department, always looking for other conditions that could be added to the list of improved conditions. Is nausea, is that a possibility? Or you heard this young woman talk about how it affects her quality of life.
Sure. So, you know, I think that we've set this petition process up so that people can request any condition, and we'll look it up, we'll consider it, we'll submit it to the commissioner for consideration. And, you know, I think that it's really it's really tough. It is a program that unfortunately isn't accessible by everyone.
And it's, again, the question, if you move state to state, every state has different rules and laws.
Yeah, you know, we do have operations in multiple states, and there's obviously a spectrum. But I just want to point out that, you know, Chris and her office and also the manufacturers here, we are limited by the law of the land. Mm-hmm. And that is fairly restrictive. You know, the Commissioner of Health can't decide that flower is okay. We actually need legislative change for that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the meaningful changes, as Jessica brought up, encourage you guys to reach out to your legislators and mm-hmm. and push them on the issues.
And Jessica, when I introduced you, I said that you were vice chair of Sensible Change
yep.
Minnesota. What is that?
It is a group that is committed to helping move Minnesota state medical cannabis laws forward to be more inclusive, more accessible. And I recommend people go check out our website for more information about how to engage with your lawmakers and how to advocate for really positive, meaningful change so that more people have access to safe, affordable medication in Minnesota.
In St. Paul, Angela is listening. Hi, Angela.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. What's your story?
So I'm 36 years old, and about 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with the first of multiple autoimmune diseases that cause significant debilitating pain. And I went from I was actually in medical school to hardly being able to leave the house just with such significant pain. And about a little over a year ago, I was certified for medical cannabis through my doctor. And I just I started saving a bunch of money, and I was just able to afford to actually get these products a little over a month ago. And sorry, I'm choking up. It's been life changing. We're still messing, tweaking things a little bit. I'm trying to find a balance between pain relief without having some of the psychoactive side effects. But I've in 10 years, I'm finally able to. I'm feeling better.
And Angela, tell me again, in what time period, how many months have you been using the medical cannabis?
It's been about a month and a half.
A month and a half. And what form are you using it in?
I have a topical cream and an oil that I use orally, and I also have a vape pen to use as needed.
And this is for pain?
Right, yep. Okay.
And so what would you, it's been 5 years now here in Minnesota, what would you like to see happen moving forward? We're hearing expense seems to be the major barrier for most people.
And that was the biggest thing for me too. I've been in the chronic pain community for a long time, and I've been talking with a lot of different people, and cost is absolutely the most prohibitive because a lot of us can't work full time anymore. We can't make the money that we used to because our pain is limiting us so much. And I've known people who've lived here their whole lives and have packed up and gone to Colorado or to mm-hmm. Oregon or just to find some relief from their pain that's affordable. So I think that's absolutely been the biggest barrier. I know once I actually got in into the clinic, the pharmacist that I work with, everybody was so fantastic and really working to help find what we need or what I need and what works best for me.
All right. That's Angela in St. Paul. Thank you, Angela, for sharing what you've experienced in using medical cannabis for treatment of pain. Jessica, you're nodding.
Yeah.
Listening.
My heart just breaks for her because that story is all too common for the people who really need relief from their symptoms, whether it's pain, whether it's an autoimmune disorder, like she suggested. Those can be notoriously difficult to treat. And the cost is an incredible barrier. If you're a person and you're sick and you have barriers to being able to get out to work, the cost of the medication that might actually make it so you can get back into the workforce, it's kind of a sick and twisted cycle, and my heart just breaks. And that's one example of the stories that illustrate why we need to make this program much more available to patients, whatever their conditions are. It has to be accessible, affordable, and safe for people in Minnesota.
And I'd just like to acknowledge that our program recognizes that as the number one barrier to participation in the program is the cost of product. And we are really digging into, we want to make policy recommendations based on data. So we're really trying to dig into what's driving that price. What can we learn from other states? We've heard about LEAF as an option to drive down the price of product. But we've talked to other states like New York and Florida who have medical programs, strong medical programs with lower price points for their products. And they really believe that adding more manufacturers and more dispensaries was the answer to that in their states. So we're really trying to look at all of the policy solutions for driving the price down.
And so here in Minnesota, we have two.
That's right.
Manufacturers. So Dr. Kingsley's company, and then the second one is Leafline.
That's right.
Right. And so do you see more companies being able to do it in the future?
Right now, we're limited by legislation to these two companies. However, we're looking at what is driving the price and what could bring it down. So I think we're just exploring all options right now.
And Dr. Kingsley, as the CEO of Minnesota Medical Solutions, one of the manufacturers, one of the providers, what can you say about the money? I mean, I've read that some of these medical marijuana companies are losing money, that it's not really profitable.
Yeah, so fairly familiar with the dynamics in most of the states. We operate in about 10. I can say that in Minnesota, we're very much sort of demand limited, and we don't have, very many patients in the state per capita. The biggest reason for that is price point, and the biggest reason for price point, I can say, is the absence of flower. And the nice thing about flower is it's an affordable price point. It really fills the coffers, brings a lot of people into the fold, and all the prices across the board can go down if you have increased participation. So, it would be one thing if we were not demand limited, then I'd be all for adding, a slew of manufacturers. That would make a ton of sense. But, right now, stacking additional manufacturers on top of the current system would not be, every company in Minnesota has lost money every year they've operated here. So,
and so, Chris, in our final minute and a half here as a leading this program for the health department for the state, what are your priorities as you look to 2020 for Minnesota's medical cannabis program? Is it continuing to do research? Is it listening to people to see what the conditions should be added? What are your priorities in the next year?
Sure. So, I've been with the program for about a year now, and our top priorities are really continuing to provide safe products to people and to continue to increase access and to hopefully address this price issue.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I have learned a lot in the last hour. I want to thank our three guests who are here with us today as we get an update on how Minnesota's medical cannabis program is going. Chris Focus, the acting director of the Office of Medical Cannabis at the Minnesota Health Department. Dr. Kyle Kingsley, the founder and CEO of Vireo Health and Minnesota Medical Solutions as well. And Jessica Hauser, a mother of a young medical cannabis patient, Wyatt, who's 7, and we hope that he continues to do well. Thank you all so much for your time and your insight.
Thank you, Angela.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis NPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.